We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into the RotoWire NFL podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. This podcast presented, of course, by our friends over at WinBet. Mario, today I am recording. If you're watching live, you're treated to this. I am in my constitutional law study. Mm-hmm. As you can see, my library of many leather-bound books from which I learn many things. I can definitely read. And yeah, that's where I'm at today.
Who is your favorite lawyer of all time?
Who's that? The Southern dugong lawyer from Futurama that's also a chicken.
Oh, I haven't seen that one. I thought you were going to say the trope of the Southern lawyer. That's a valid answer. That is a top five lawyer of all time. I don't know. I guess I'd say Cochran just because I don't know that many lawyers off the top of my head. I was hoping to think of a fictional one, but I couldn't think of any shows or whatever fast enough.
You know, Lionel Hutz would have been a good one.
Oh, yeah, he's the best one. He's the best one, definitely.
And then the guy from Always Sunny with the really small hands, and he wore fake hands. Yeah, Uncle Jack.
And I guess the last one would be the Fonz in Arrested Development as whatever he was, Barry.
He wasn't very good at his job either.
Good lawyer, though.
We love him nonetheless. Yeah. Anyway, it is week 7 of the NFL season, and this was a week that I think a lot of us circled back when we were doing our best ball drafts and in our redrafts and all that stuff. It's like, oh boy, we're going to be running into a tough one that week. It's going to be a bit of a squeeze. We're definitely going to have to be working the waiver wire come week 7. Maybe fit some guys in that we normally wouldn't. But I think that problem has kind of been exacerbated by all the injuries that we've seen from around the league. Like it is brutal this week. Like the Chubb injury, you know, you got McCaffrey, Barkley, and then obviously like you have guys like Zeke on a bye, and it's going to be really, really tough. We're going to see some low scores this week, I think, across a lot of best ball formats and a lot of people just sweating things out on Sunday, hoping to get to like 80, 85 points in their home leagues.
Yeah. They should lengthen the season and like not add any bye weeks because these injuries are so manageable. They should make the season longer if they could. I don't know you're just gonna have to start some weird scenarios. Like I was trying to bid up for D'Ernest Johnson, which if you had told me that 2 months ago that like, hey man, you're gonna blow like 40% of your fab in week 7 on D'Ernest Johnson, I would have smugly bet my life on, you know, no, I won't. That's impossible. But here we are, and you know, we're grateful to have D'Ernest is where we're at.
We sure are. And then in the Superflex leg of the pentathlon that we're in, I got angry yesterday morning after free agents ran and Case Keenum had been picked up because I need warm body at quarterback.
That sucks. He's going to, I don't know. I don't want to say he'll definitely have a bad game, but maybe you didn't miss out on that much. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, likely not.
Eight and a half.
Something like that. I scooped Oh, I scooped Deshaun Watson, so hopefully I'll be able to flip him for something amid the latest rumors, which are the same rumors that they've been for months. So we'll see what ends up happening there. But speaking of Case Keenum, him and those Cleveland Browns play this evening against the Denver Broncos, who are also a bit banged up, but the Browns still 1-point favorites at home in spite of all of those injuries, not just to Baker Mayfield, but also to the backfield with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Got some injuries along that offensive line. We saw the famous quote from Von Miller earlier this week. So this one could get funky. There's something about the Broncos on Thursday night. We obviously had that famous one, Broncos Jets from last year with the Brett Rippon experience, the Jeff Smith experience from a year ago. So I'm expecting similar levels of funk in this game.
Like talking about a Boise and Boston College bowl game, like the Beef O'Brady's bowl or something. Anyway, we'll hopefully get something better than that here. Maybe not, though. Like you said, the Browns are really beat up. Like Beckham, is he out? They list him as questionable with no practice.
Sounds good. He's got a grade 3 AC sprain, which I think is really, really tough to play on as far as I know.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's see. Jack Conklin, not 100%. So many things that could go wrong in different phases of different levels of both the offense and the defense. So with that degree of uncertainty, I don't know how much, you know, the past production, the past records of these teams really matter. I mean, I guess. What are you thinking on this, John? Like, do you just go Teddy over Keenum? Because I don't even know if I don't know what's going on with that Denver defense either. It's like they got those three corners that are so good. They got Chubb. They got Miller. Not looking that great. So I don't know. Maybe the short week bails them out. Maybe all those Cleveland injuries bail them out.
I think that like the defense on Cleveland, despite all the injuries on offense, the defense I think is still relatively intact. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's a great Broncos offense.
I think I still do like the Broncos to get this just because I do feel like their offense, you know, it had arguably as much or more to start with as the Browns, but it also had like a lot more depth specifically. So they've been thinned out, but they still have Fant, Patrick, Sutton, whereas the Browns are down to like Donovan Peoples-Jones and I guess Njoku as their biggest guys on offense. So if Case Keenum does win this, it'll, you know, he'll deserve some amount of credit.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see later this afternoon over on the RotoWire sports betting account. We'll get the numbers on the handle from the WinBet sports book as far as where the money's going on this particular game. As far as the sheer amount of bets and then also the money. But as it stands, once again, we have the Browns -1 in this one and the over-under anywhere between 40 and 41, depending where you're looking. So I think we're going to see a good amount of money on the Broncos, and the under is going to be my guess as far as the betting market is concerned. But I guess last question on this one, as far as like those guys that you normally wouldn't be starting, but may have to this week, and the Thursday game really kind of like holds your feet to it a little bit. Would you start a guy like DPJ? Obviously it sounds like you're relatively confident, relatively being the operative word there, and starting a D'Ernest Johnson tonight. Can you start a Demetri Felton as well? I mean, what are your thoughts there?
So I didn't mean to sound especially confident about starting D'Ernest Johnson. It's more like you might not really have much choice in some cases, but I don't know. He's kind of interesting. He can catch some passes if they fall behind. I don't know if Felton's going to play more. The more they trail, the longer they trail. I don't know if Felton just plugs in as the hurry-up guy, because D'Ernest Johnson can do some of that. He was actually a pass-catching specialist at South Florida, so he could do that. I guess it's going to be Rashard Higgins in addition to Peoples-Jones at receiver. Like Schwartz kind of seems like he's just settled into a decoy role. So I don't know. Higgins is a pretty good player, but most of his production has come with Baker Mayfield on the field. Like they kind of work really well together. Maybe Case works well with him too, but Peoples-Jones, like all the Browns receivers, projects pretty poorly in this game, but at least when you're talking about athleticism and size like his, there's more probability of just the big plays like he showed last week. So he can turn a slipped tackle into a touchdown, whereas Higgins can't. Schwartz could, of course, but he's, you know, playing 25 snaps or whatever and getting a couple gimmicky targets, not much to work with there. So I guess you could see a lot of the tight ends too, and some sort of attempt to sort of like help Case Keenum and give more blocking, because the three starting linemen, I think that's the left tackle, the right tackle, and the center for the Browns, are all pretty beat up right now.
Yeah, that's definitely a tough wrinkle there for the Browns. You know, in addition to just having the skill talent be swept out from underneath you, you also have the trouble along the offensive line. Like you mentioned, Broncos defense not playing quite up to the standard we expected. But at the same time, if you have a Von Miller and a Bradley Chubb going against backups, you still lean that way. Let's get on over to Sunday. No London game this week, so we will kick things off with the 1 o'clock Eastern window. We got Panthers, Giants. Panthers 3-point favorites on the road in this one, a low over under in this one as well, 42.5. I mean, the Giants are another team that are kind of the walking wounded label at this point. I mean, Barkley, I don't know if his ankle looks any less like a softball than it did a couple Sundays ago in Dallas. We obviously saw Kadarius Toney mid-breakout essentially hurt his ankle. So that's just another one on top of all the injuries that the Giants receiving core has had. So how do you view this one shaking out?
It's tough because in addition to the injuries, like it would have been a weird matchup anyway, even if these two teams were fully healthy, it would be kind of hard to anticipate where it would all head, because there's some good players. There's some big plays they can make, but also two teams that are capable of turning any given game into a total circus. And both defenses have a little bit of talent to work with. So I don't know. This could get ugly. With Daniel Jones, you do have that shot of him like inexplicably, like against the Saints, turning it into a shootout, even though he's got a bad matchup against a good defense. That can happen with him, but they'll have to manage the Carolina pass rush, which, as long as Burns and Reddick are out there, that's looking pretty tough. But if they do, I don't know what, like, matchup wise looks so bad for the Giants here. Darnold is not playing well at all. Like, the Carolina offense has been basically not viable. Especially the last few weeks, obviously, but even when they were scoring points and winning games in the first 3 weeks, it was more sputtering than it was functional. DJ Moore aside, like, DJ Moore was doing everything and everything else was sputtering, but the defense and Sam Darnold's fluky rush touchdowns kind of covered that up. There's no cover anymore. I don't know why you would give the Panthers any particular benefit of the doubt, even with the Giants being all messed up. Unless there's basically quit watch in effect on the Giants and Joe Judge, who I don't know what the exact contents are of, like, the locker room there, like what they feel like, what, how they evaluate him, how much patience they have. But from afar, you'd have to imagine kind of like not much faith, not much patience, not much credibility, etc. So maybe they just kind of run out of gas because they can't keep playing for this guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible he hasn't really done a particularly good job through this first year and a quarter. And then, you know, going back to the Panthers, I had them survivor week one against the Jets, and, like, that game had me sweating a little bit longer than I needed. And they didn't even look very good against the Texans either, I didn't think.
They've looked good at no point, just the defense. Defense has a couple points.
So, yeah, I don't have any reason to back the Panthers here. I know the Giants and Daniel Jones, like, he famously has worse splits at home, but I still can't trust the Panthers with points on the road right now, especially sans McCaffrey. So
yeah, Darnold isn't doing anything. Like, however bad the opposing quarterback might be, Darnold can be as bad. That's how hopeless they've looked.
And this game is at MetLife. He might just get flashbacks during this game.
just flashbacks of mono. Just like all of a sudden, it's like chubby cheeked on the sideline,
seeing ghosts and all that, like from that Monday night game against the Patriots a few years back. All right, that'll do it for this game. I don't know if there's too much more to unpack there. Not a ton of juicy matchups this week. And speaking of, we got Jets Patriots. We got Zach Wilson versus Zach and Mac. We got the Patriots 6.5 or 7-point favorites, depending on where you're looking. The over under looking like 42.5. The Patriots just strike me as a good, bad team. And the Jets strike me as a bad, bad team. What say you?
That sounds pretty fair. Especially the second part, very difficult to disagree with. But I do agree with, yeah, good, bad team for the Patriots. They're clearly not a good team overall. And, you know, even the defense, like, I don't know why it isn't better than it is, especially in coverage. You would have thought they'd get better returns with some of the talent they have there. Even in the front seven, it's like, I thought they'd have more pass rush. Just Judon is pretty much all that's going right now. So we'll see how it goes, but they don't seem to have any actual strength or identity really beyond being a check down passing offense. And that's going to be enough to win here, I think. Like, Zach Wilson on the other side, almost no matter what defense he plays at the moment, I guess Titans is the only team that we can feel any sort of assurance with Zach Wilson, because he's been a mess. And if it wasn't for, you know, if there weren't as many messes in the league right now as there are, there might have been more attention paid to kind of like, wow, this Wilson thing doesn't appear to be working. Not that it's all his fault, and maybe not much of it is, but the problems persist in this matchup. Going to Foxborough is not going to make any of that better. So it's going to be a wreck on the Jets offense side, to the point that however good or bad the Patriots offense is, probably won't matter a whole lot. So I don't know about 7 points. I guess I'll take it, just because I can't really see the Jets scoring. But I'm not expecting the Patriots to look like they're great or anything.
Yeah, I think Belichick, rookie quarterback, you know, I think that this ends up going poorly, and it's in Foxborough, of course. So I think all of those factors combine to where I am on the Patriots in this particular matchup. But hopefully Red Zone won't be beaming that one into our eyes too much on Sunday. Let's go Chiefs Titans. We got the Chiefs 4.5-point favorites on the road here. We got the highest over under of the week, creeping up to 58 points in this one. You know, the Titans, I never know what to make of them, because they can do things like they did on Monday night, but they can also do things like you mentioned against the Jets, where you know, they lose to a clearly, or what should be on paper, a way inferior opponent, but then they bow up and beat what I still think is probably the best team in the AFC. So really, really tough to know what to make of them. And then, of course, you don't really know what to take away from the Chiefs after a week ago, because, you know, they were able to go into Washington and get the job done there. But Washington, I think, it is a way bigger mess than either of us anticipated whatsoever. So how much can you really glean from that? I think they have some injury issues in their own right. So what are your thoughts on this particular matchup?
So the Titans, I don't know how we'll, if we're using that same system as the last game, I don't know where they fit on that spectrum. I think they're kind of an average team. It's like really good offense, bad defense. The ways in which the offense is as good as it is are very dependent on Derrick Henry. And I know they have AJ Brown and Julio Jones, but Ryan Tannehill has made clear this year, not that he didn't make it clear before, but we always have to relearn some things. Yep. Apparently he's not very good. He's maybe an average quarterback, maybe, and whatever, that might be fine enough for them to get to the Super Bowl or whatever at some point, but he's not actually good. And when he needs to be good, you're not necessarily going to get good results. And even when they're like moving the ball to catch up to the Bills in the last game, like any quarterback can hit a wide open crossing route to AJ Brown if they've got 5 seconds to wait in the pocket to throw it. And when he doesn't have those conditions, he just falls apart. So he had conditions that were more favorable than some other games last week. Still had a lot of unnecessary pressure. He's just getting sacked like every 5 dropbacks this year, and it's not all the offensive line's fault. But what bridged the gap last week was Derrick Henry being not a human. And that's usually like when they have an upset, it's usually because Derrick Henry went nuts. And I think it was a combination of the Bills being a little overrated. Like their win against the Chiefs was basically like a non-applicable game result. Like it was rainy. The rain benefited the Bills. The Chiefs couldn't play in it. Game was sloppy. It just didn't necessarily mean that much. So I think people are a little too high on the Bills, a little bit, you know, forgot about what the Titans can do on offense. And, you know, we're seeing it level out here, but I don't think, I mean, I know the Titans could be a threat. Like if Derrick Henry has a certain sort of game, if AJ Brown is a certain sort of game, it's going to be tough for any kind of team to keep up with them. But I don't see anything in the Tennessee defense that can slow Kansas City. Like, I don't know, short of Mahomes just kind of having a bad day for no reason, I don't know what the Titans can do about the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, so I think all of those factors that you mentioned there inform why the total is so high for this week. I guess one thing to bear in mind, you know, maybe the Chiefs will be able to get Chris Jones back. They were making a huge deal of that in that Bills game.
That is a big deal. Yeah.
It is. Yeah, 100%. So he's questionable. And then, of course, you know, we had the scary moment in Monday night's game. Obviously, they wouldn't necessarily be lining up against each other, but Taylor Lewan having to get stretchered off, he's questionable as well. So, I mean, you know, we could see both of these, both sides of the trenches, especially when the Titans have the ball, not be at full strength.
Yeah, if Jones is in there and Lewan is out, that could, you know, make the bad case Tannehill scenario a little more likely.
Yeah, I think so as well. And then I guess just looking at some of the secondary Chiefs players, not in the secondary, but, you know, your Mecole Hardmans and, you know, the backfield. Do you feel confident in starting any of those guys this week, just given that this high total in this matchup? Is this something that you're pursuing for either your lineups or for DFS?
Well, Daryl Williams is a fullback, basically, but even if it's just a fullback getting carries, if it's John Kuhn who's starting at running back for the Chiefs, that's still useful in fantasy as long as there's no one, you know, taking carries away. And McKinnon can't really do that. So if we do expect the Chiefs to kind of take care of business here, then Daryl Williams could definitely be the beneficiary of that. And specifically like the, you know, the red zone. Don't expect much in the way of yardage from scrimmage, but touchdowns are in play for sure. And I don't know. I can't answer the Hardman question anymore because, like, I think he's doing pretty well. I mean, the lost fumble was annoying last week, but he's been good as a pass catcher this year, even though they haven't really got him, other than last week, they haven't really got him going deep at all. So I'm interested to see what will happen if they just keep him out there and keep giving him chances, because he's not showing up when they want him to exactly. But when you keep the standards less strict with him, like, by any reasonable standard, he's doing pretty well. It's just he's not being the star that they want. And I don't know if there is room after Tyreek and Kelce for that. I think if Watkins can barely do anything, then maybe he just can't really do anything as the third receiver there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're starting to see here, because, you know, in years past, he's much more downfield. I mean, his ADOT is 7.3, which is perilously right. low for a wide receiver, especially a wide receiver of, you know, his skill set. So, yeah, it does kind of feel like that. They just need to have somebody, a warm body in that role, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, if they start giving him those long throws like in the past, I think we have reason to believe they'll start hitting, and all of a sudden his box score could look really good and get people talking about him more. But they're just, other than that one throw last week, everything's been like 5 yards within the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, very, very strange usage when it comes to Hardman. But it has somehow kind of, you know, made him a little bit more PPR viable with 26 catches through six games.
Hey, PPR Hardman, standard scoring Hardman, 80-yard bombs only.
That's what we want, baby. Let's move on over next game. But before then, we got a message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, next up, we got the Packers playing host to the Washington football team. This one will be a popular survivor pick this week in favor of the Packers. Of course, this one being played at Lambeau, the Packers seem to be playing extremely well right now. I mean, they struggled against the Bengals, but maybe the Bengals aren't nearly as bad as we thought. And then obviously last week, just kind of taking it to the Bears as they tend to do. Whereas the football team, like I was just mentioning with the last game breakdown, they are just in a complete mess right now. Nothing's going well. And that, you know, the backfield situation where you have Gibson, you know, trying to play through what seems like just a pretty tough injury to play through. It's really hard to find a lot of optimism with
this Washington team.
Yep.
What can you say? They're awful. They suck. Not so much at the lower part of the organization. Like, it's not really Ron Rivera's fault. He can't, not to give him credit or anything, but not much he can do about the kind of rot that this team has going on. Maybe he could control the medical staff a little more and get the kind of staff that says like, hey, 230 pound back with the split shin, you're not playing this week, that kind of thing. But in the absence of that, we've got everybody who's any good on this team hurt, and they weren't that great to start with. So, yeah, even if Rodgers has maybe the worst game of his whole career, I don't know if they can lose this one. So with Washington having an underachieving defense that doesn't really do anything, an offense that didn't do much and might do less than that, due to injuries, the Aaron Jones show, Rodgers show, somebody, should be pretty easy.
Yeah, I think so too. Are you going at, is this a week where you're going heavy at Davante Adams for DFS, or is it more the Jones show?
Not as heavy as the one a couple weeks ago. I can't remember which matchup that was.
Bengals,
but, like Bengals, yeah, not as much as the Bengals, but I mean, Adams, there's always a case for him to be the top receiver in the rankings every week. This doesn't seem like an exception. However, the Packers probably don't need to use him to clean up here, so maybe they won't. Maybe they'll try to get 2020 Tonyan going or something like that.
That would be nice. You know, RIP to my Tonyan shares. That is not gone particularly well this season. Let's get on over. We got Falcons, Dolphins. This, I think on paper, it's not a good matchup. We see the Falcons 2.5-point road favorites, but I think it's one of the more interesting games to talk about this week from like a betting standpoint, because you have the rare occurrence where the Dolphins are going into this game coming off London, but not having a bye, whereas the Falcons were in London 2 weeks ago and are coming off the bye. So they're fresh. And I think that completely informs why they would be favored on the road. I think if both teams were rested or had the same rest, specifically not the London factor mixed in, I think that this one's closer to a pick'em. So I'm just very interested to see how this one goes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's an interesting detail about, you know, the longer rest for the Falcons. It looks like a lot of the most relevant Dolphins injuries are improving, though. It's like, it looks like Xavien Howard might be back. There's not many guys who've been missing practice this week, right? Actually, I guess nobody. A lot of limited practice, but not DNPs on the Dolphins side. So if they get a little healthier than they've been in a few weeks, maybe that has some kind of effect. I don't really know how to call a game like this at all, though, because I would say that the Falcons are probably better managed from the coaching part. The Dolphins don't appear to have a lot like Flores. I can imagine him being a good coach in another scenario, but I think he basically has no control of this circus. I don't know if there's much he can do about it at this point. So maybe that bridges any potential talent advantage that the Dolphins have, and that plus the rest, maybe it's good process for that reason to go with the Falcons. But I don't know, man, I do worry about this, I guess until further notice, this Falcons offensive line I worry about. And not that the Dolphins defense is frightening. It's just, I don't know if they're bad enough before to the point that we can start feeling safe with Ryan. Like, I worry about that passing game falling apart like it did in the first couple weeks. And if it does, it'll be pretty tough to win, because even if Tua isn't very good, even if the Dolphins offense basically sucks, they should be able to move the ball at least a little bit against the Falcons. And you know, there's a couple of good players, especially, I don't know if Parker's out for a while, but if somebody, Preston Williams, can step in again and get just somebody out there who's any good, this Falcons defense seems pretty bad still.
Preston Williams is like the Tim Patrick of the AFC East.
Except constantly getting hurt, apparently. And maybe if he can play, if Parker can play, I feel like the Dolphins, between that and Waddle and even Gesicki, the doofus that he is, they should be able to win, even if their defense kind of doesn't show up.
I love how you're the Gesicki's number one foil.
I mean, it's I guess the number one foil is Durham Smith, whatever.
Yeah. Either way.
I'm the second one. Yeah.
True. You got the number two Dolphins jersey, and then when it comes to Waddle, what do you do with him? Because you know we see him score two touchdowns a week ago, but like the yardage is strange. Like he's getting a lot of volume, but we're seeing his ADOT again. You know, like we were saying about Mecole Hardman. I think that Waddle might be a little bit more complete, and it makes a little more sense to get him like the screen game action, but
it's stupid.
Completely not letting him go down the field seems ridiculous to me. A 5.5 ADOT.
Yeah, the Dolphins offense is repulsive, and I guess I should have, in hindsight, thought co-offensive coordinators, co-play callers. You know, I should have seen like a red flag with that, because this does look like an offense that has no idea what it even means to do. Like they go in every week, kind of just thinking, "What if we try this? Like, what if we give Malcolm Brown 8 carries this week?" That didn't work. Let's give him 0 next week. Give 10 targets to Gaskin, bench him after that, bring him back in after that. Like all these things that they do just don't really show any sort of pursuit of identity. Like they don't really have things that they do in certain situations other than throwing it 5 yards at most to Jalen Waddle at all times. Like that's the system, basically just screen passes to Waddle. Like you said, it's ridiculous. He can kill downfield. It's not that he would be pretty good downfield. Like he can be a uniquely dangerous downfield receiver, and they're not using him that way. So I think it's pretty clearly like out of his control, and he's doing a really good job with a silly situation here, but it is silly. And 37 catches for 301 yards and 3 touchdowns should be kind of a crap box score, but he's actually being somewhat efficient. Like he's basically working the way a really good screen pass target would, like catching 80% of your targets at a, you know, 5.7 yards a target or something. Eventually they'll have to throw it downfield. Like they've somehow gone like this entire time just not doing it. Eventually it has to happen, but generally he's going to be dependent on these, I guess, like double digit catch games to get anywhere, because it's going to take that many catches to move the ball past 40 yards.
Right. Yeah. The volume is buoying him for now. And, you know, if somehow that they unlock the actual speed and big play ability that he has, then those who stomached having him on your team for the early,
he has been fine.
Mm-hmm.
He has been fine in fantasy. It's repulsive to watch in real life, and the box score is ugly, but it's like 29 PPR points last week.
Yeah, no, that was good. So, I mean, we'll see what ends up happening with that. And then on the other side, Ridley presumably coming back, and then you know, how much stock are you putting in Pitts' performance against the Jets as it pertains to this week?
Well, Pitts is definitely that good, and Ridley is definitely as good as we had reason to assume coming into this year. The question is whether the Falcons can be functional enough as a broader offense to leave room for both of them at the same time. And that's a pretty low bar to reach, actually, like especially since Pitts has tight end standards rather than receiver ones. It should be easy to have enough room for both of them to be big fantasy producers. And to this point, it's more so been that only one of the two, if either, have been able to get it going. So I do think, in a way, Ridley's absence last week got Pitts going, but I also think it's one of those things that it should have kind of revealed something to them that they can keep in place even after Ridley's return and pursue that offense that's more like, yeah, Ridley takes like 38% of your targets or something, and Pitts is clearly your second functioning pass catcher, and the volume isn't so high on the offense, and it's not so explosive, but those two are really good, and then you kind of leverage the run game off the rest and, you know, use two tight ends and stuff to try to make it all work. But yeah, to this point, I guess when they were both on the field, the offensive line would fall apart or Ryan would just kind of play poorly and it hadn't gotten going. It's clear, I think, that Pitts and Ridley are more than ready, willing, able to do their part. And it just waits to be seen whether the offensive line and I guess Ryan can get the ball to both of them.
Yeah, so that's like the other key detail of this game is seeing how those two can coexist now that we've seen Pitts kind of like get his feet wet and have his first really big statement game, the kind of game that we
really insanely good.
Yeah. It's wild. I remember watching that game a couple Sunday mornings ago, and that was more effective than coffee. Before we get into our next game, got a message from our sponsors. Let's start things out with our friends over at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions. And even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 6 states. That's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WynnBet. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also got a message from our friends over at Yahoo DFS. The new NFL season is underway, and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. There will be a ton of big prize contests throughout the season on Yahoo, including their multi-entry contest now being shark-free. To celebrate the beginning of football season and Yahoo daily fantasy football becoming shark-free, Yahoo is giving all users the opportunity to claim free $10 in contest entry credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join one of Yahoo's biggest contests. In addition to the free credit, Yahoo has a $1 million DFS football contest live. The $1 million contest features $1 million in total prizes, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry to the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championship live finals event, which will occur at MGM National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 to get started. Again, that's sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim that free $10 and to get you started. All right, Mario, on to the next one here. We got Bengals Ravens. One of the more interesting results of last weekend was Baltimore's kind of resounding victory over the Chargers. That game wasn't really that close at really any point. And then the Bengals seem to be, playing well. They obviously took care of business against the Lions. This one, we have the Ravens sitting at -6.5 at home against their divisional opponents. What's your read on this game?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't understand what happened with that Chargers game, or at least if that happens, I don't understand why the Ravens defense was so bad against the Colts before that. Seems like two very different teams, and whichever one or whatever split the difference of the two, I guess, whatever scenario we get going forward, of course, will hold sway over how they do in any given game, any game like this, of course, against divisional opponent. And I don't know which way it's headed. Like I assumed the Ravens defense would be good coming into this year, but I up until last week, completely lost faith in that idea. I don't know whether it was a 1 week inexplicable thing. Like,
Chargers. I kind of do.
Yeah, like I feel that way too. It's just, I don't know. They looked so brutal before that.
They did. I mean, they've gotten the ball moved on them by the Lions, by the Broncos a little bit, the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders can move the ball on people. But I think that the Ravens and where part of their defensive struggles this season have come from has been the Marcus Peters injury. And I don't think that the Chargers had the personnel last week to make them pay for it. And I think that the Bengals absolutely do.
That's probably the right read on it. I do wonder though if the Bengals are functional enough in their own right to really capitalize on it. Like they have the personnel, and if it were a year from now, I would be much more concerned for the Ravens in this scenario, because I assume Burrow's knee will be in better shape in a year. Not to mention just Higgins and Chase might be better yet by that point. But this offense that they've had to this point strikes me as kind of not not like weak or anything, but it a little fragile. Like it reminds me a little tiny bit of the Panthers offense after the first 3 weeks when it seemed like things were going fine. You know, they're winning games. They're making big plays. They're throwing for touchdowns, things like that. But I don't know if the ways that those big plays were occurring were sustainable over the course of the year. And I think something similar here, it's like not to take credit away from Ja'Marr Chase. Like I definitely think he's as good as he appears to be, but a couple of his big plays have been kind of fluky and not in a way that, again, not to take credit away, but just in a way that affects his peripheral stats in ways that are likely to regress no matter what, no matter how well he plays, you know, things like yards after the catch per catch. And like that one touchdown he had, it was like a changeup looking throw that the defender just kind of like misjudged where the ball went and Chase caught it, ran for a touchdown. And he can make that play, but he can't make it every time. And if when it does regress, T. Higgins can't step up, they might just kind of go cold for a while. And I don't know if maybe there's something deliberate about the way they're using T. Higgins, but they're not using him the right way. If there isn't some broader setup here or longer setup here, where they're gonna, you know, go over the top with Higgins this week, like they were saving him for the Ravens, that kind of thing, maybe then they'll have enough firepower to really take down the Ravens. But they're not getting T. Higgins going downfield at all, and if he's just doing 6 yard curls to, you know, not a whole lot of effect, Chase will eventually have just kind of like a cold stretch for a couple quarters. And if that happens, and if Mixon doesn't pick it up, they could go into a shell pretty quick.
Right. I think, yeah, the way that you laid out the fragility there when it comes to this Bengals offense, you know, this will be a big test for, I think, for how we view them the rest of the season. But, you know, but I'm inclined to think that they'll be able to score points on Baltimore. And I know that Cincinnati's defense has been much better this year than in years past. But I think the Ravens will still be able to move the ball on them a lot. And I think with that, the way that I would like to bet this one is the over 47. I see this one being like a 27-24 game in favor of the Ravens.
Okay. I'm more confident in the Bengals defense at this point than the offense, which sounds insane for so many reasons to say, but it sounds maybe backhanded too, but I don't mean it. Like the defense is playing well and they've got some good players at all levels at this point. So I think the defense is carrying them more than people think, basically. And the degree to which they can take control against the Ravens offense, I think, is pretty much a good corollary for how good their chances of winning are. Because the offense could step up, I guess, but if the defense doesn't, I don't think their offense can keep up with the Ravens one.
Okay. So, well, that defense will need to do... They're going to need to play a great game, though, because I think that the Ravens offense, I mean, the scoreboard says they played a good game last week. I didn't think it was great, but I think on the whole, it's not quite what 2019 looked like from Lamar. It's different. But I think as far as how well overall he is playing right now, it's about as good as I've seen him.
Yeah, I know that the Colts game kind of boosted his box score to this point in the year, but especially when Bateman is hitting full speed, as Sammy gets back, hits full speed again, they can just kind of shoot out as much as anyone wants to.
Yeah, see, exactly. And that's an element that they certainly didn't have in the Seth Roberts, Willie Snead days.
Safe to say.
Indeed. All right, so let's get on over. We got Lions, Rams, Stafford, Goff. The reunion, the rematch, not really rematch.
Who is better? We finally find out.
Yeah. Well, Vegas says that the Rams are more than two touchdowns better than the Lions. And you know what? I tend to agree with them. That's a big number, but at the same time, I think the Lions have gone from, I think there's only so many of those moral victories you can have before they stop mattering. And then you kind of are just an awful team. And I think we've reached that point with the Lions.
Yeah, you're right. They've had some injuries kind of help bring about that scenario, but there's no help on the way is the thing with them. It's like they were a team that can maybe surprise opponents with how scrappy they are. And for the first few weeks, they were kind of playing at 110% motor. They're kind of making that happen. But at least with these injuries happening and the Goff reality becoming painfully clear, it's hard to see what could give for the better. And short of DeAndre Swift just kind of going nuts, Hockenson going nuts and kind of dragging the offense with them, and nothing else besides that. Like, I'm not saying, like, then they can, you know, get into this kind of scoring position and maybe win a game. Not really. I don't know who they can really win against like this. Like, Goff can't play. Swift and Hockenson can only do so much. The offensive line can't do anything. The defense doesn't exist. I don't think, like, the only threat to the Rams, like, not covering here is sort of running out the clock too fast, you know? Like, I don't know what the Lions can even begin to do in this game.
Yeah, I don't either. I guess this game is more tricky for DFS purposes, because obviously
you're playing
Rams and you love, you know, anyone going up against the Lions. But is this a situation where, like you kind of alluded to, where they just build that big lead and then just kind of let the clock run out?
I think you got to start all the Rams you usually start, but I think you add to the startable list Sony Michel, especially. Just because if the Rams cover, Sony Michel probably got like 12 carries at least.
Yeah, and I would 100% take that against this Lions defense. Let's get on over. We got Eagles, Raiders, two very, very funky teams at this stage. The Raiders obviously coming off the emotional, or not really emotional, but you know, a rallying win over Denver. And then, of course, the Eagles, they're one of those teams where you watch what's happening on the field and you're like, these guys are terrible. And then they covered against the Bucks. Jalen Hurts is, you know, he specifically is that guy where you watch him and you're like, this, how? And then all of a sudden he's like a top 10 fantasy quarterback, even still, because, you know, garbage time is very good to him, it seems like. So how do you see this one shaking out? This one, I might have the hardest time getting a read on this game.
Maybe I'm overlooking the Eagles, but I feel like the Raiders are like warrant heavy favoritism here, because is Lane Johnson back in now? That could help.
I think he returned to the team.
Okay. Well, he's a great player when he's on the field. Having him at right tackle would help a lot with this pass rush that's waiting for them. But Max Crosby's playing out of his mind right now, to the point that we don't even really notice Ngakoue that much. But Ngakoue's hurrying the quarterback too. So Jalen Hurts has shown the ability to completely collapse in both of his last two games. I think the cracks were showing all along before that. And I expect this trend to just keep getting worse. Like, I know Hurts keeps pulling a rabbit out of the hat, especially in a fantasy sense, but eventually that's just going to stop happening, I think. And maybe not this week. And maybe it doesn't ever stop. Maybe I'm just wrong about that, but I think it will. And I think going against this edge rush, combined with Hurts's just tendency to the ability to just kind of collapse as a passer, I think it could get pretty ugly. And if they can't get Miles Sanders going, if they can't get whatever Gainwell, if they can't get Hurts as a runner going, I think asking him to pass against a defense like this is just asking for a disaster. And but then again, I've thought that about multiple games this year.
Yeah, and they've shown, you know, I'm sure if we clipped the first like six episodes of this season's podcast, you know, when we talk about the Eagles, it's if they get Miles Sanders going, they don't seem interested in doing that.
Right, and I think a lot of it's becoming clear they can't do it when to get the passing looks that they want to arrange for Hurts. They have to sacrifice the personnel that's necessary, the alignments that are necessary, the gap spacing that's necessary to run the ball. And instead, they're kind of going out there they're almost doing like the Texas Tech offensive line kind of thing, where it's just like, you know, we're assembling some very goofy formations because we just are not interested in running.
No. So it's pretty gnarly on the Eagles side of things. From the Raiders side of things, obviously Derek Carr coming off of a very strong game a week ago. How do you view the non-Waller options in this offense from fantasy, you know, be it Edwards, who's got like promising peripherals, but the production hasn't been there. You know, Renfro's done well to this point. Ruggs showed some signs earlier. Not sure if he is at the moment. So what are your thoughts there?
I think the Raiders offense has been surprisingly convincing. And I've never been a Carr fan. I probably underestimated Hunter Renfrow coming into this year. Like before, what contained him was that he just like didn't play that many snaps and he only played in three wide sets. But when he plays, he definitely draws targets at a pretty high per snap rate. And I guess they're kind of indulging the premise, like, what if we just kind of keep him out there instead of putting him on the bench and going too tight end? As long as the more that Renfrow plays, the worse for Edwards and the worse for Waller. But I do think Edwards has his own place in the offense. It's just not a high usage one. And he draws the routes that are maybe the hardest to get the ball to. Cause you got, if Edwards is on the field at the same time as Renfrow and Waller, he's just a heavy underdog for the target on that play. And he's doing really well with the targets that he does get. And I could imagine a different scenario where he had the less difficult routes and there, you know, there wasn't a Waller on the field. And I do think Edwards would do a lot more then, but for now, one of those other guys has to just basically miss time for much to give. And Ruggs, I think, has his role. Regardless of the other ones, Ruggs is going to have his role of kind of some of the slot looks that Renfrow doesn't get with obviously the deep functions, but he's been really good in those, in that role. Maybe there's more that he can do underneath. And if there is, then he's definitely looking golden because he'll probably get some regression in the deep routes. Like he's basically hitting, you know, like the majority of his deep throws are landing and he's doing a great job and he gets credit for that. But eventually the wind's going to just take the ball a little bit the wrong way or some guy's going to trip, tangle your feet with his and you fall over and it's an incomplete pass. That kind of stuff's going to happen eventually. So if he could get some short routes to offset that regression when it happens, he could really take another step yet. And in the meantime, that sort of balanced approach with those four route runners is proving pretty much, you know, defenses can't stop it for more than a couple quarters at a time.
Yeah, it's a pretty deep, skilled room. And then going back to Renfrow, the moment I was sold on him was on that fake punt that the Chargers tried to run.
Man,
he absolutely demolished that guy.
That was basically the best football player I've ever seen. That was crazy. Yeah, especially because he wasn't even supposed to really do that. He just kind of like saw that the guy wasn't covered and then did.
Yeah, he sniffed it out and just absolutely lit him up. If ESPN was still doing Jacked Up, you know, that would have been the segment.
If we were talking about how concussions are cool, like in the 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway,
those days.
He gets a lot of helmet stickers for that one. Sorry.
100%. Listener Julia wants to know, based on our Edwards discussion right there, Edwards or Hardman this week?
Oh, boy. That is tough. Man, I think I'd go with Hardman, but not because I really feel strongly about it. It's more kind of that deep ball still hasn't happened with him. And I don't think those Tennessee corners can really run with him. Even Christian Fulton, their best corner, if he's back, like he can't run with Hardman. So if that game is a shootout at all, I think you have to like Hardman's chances of finally getting that big play.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's just a little bit more of a stable, predictable role for Hardman, which it seems like a crazy sentence to say, but this year I think it is the case. Whereas Edwards, like you laid out there, you know, he's running 15 yards downfield on his targets at least. And like you said, when you have Renfrow and Waller presenting more viable targets much sooner in those progressions, it's a little bit tougher to justify Edwards in that one. And Hardman does offer that ceiling as well. I think he's burned the Titans for long touchdowns in the past, if I remember correctly. Let's get on over. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this one. We got Texans, Cardinals, 17-point favorites in this one at home. Cardinals, best team in the NFL?
I mean, they're way up there. I think what's really changed with this team is just kind of two things. They had Larry Fitzgerald wasting a snap every play almost last year in the slot, taking out him and instead putting in, technically putting in A.J. Green, but moving Christian Kirk from A.J. Green's new spot to Fitzgerald's previous spot and putting in Rondale Moore as the swing backup for all of those guys has made the offense better right off the bat. I guess adding Rodney Hudson and whatever else couldn't have hurt either. But the defense is one of the best in the league, and I still don't really see them getting credit for it. Like, there's some chatter coming up now, but like they didn't even have Chandler Jones last week. And when he's out there, especially, it's like him, Marcus Golden, Zaya Simmons, Gardeck, JJ Watt, there's a lot to deal with, a lot of big, fast guys who can kind of shuffle all over the place before the snap and line up anywhere after the snap. Maybe you guess right, maybe you don't. But if you guess wrong, it's got to be hard to arrange your protections against that defense, and they're so fast in the front seven, can just swallow you up. So Vance Joseph, I think, like, it's funny that Cliff missed that game last week, because Vance Joseph should be considered as much of the head coach of this team as Cliff Kingsbury is. He's as much responsible for their success this year, especially in the sense that the offense is pretty much just the Kyler Murray show. Like, Cliff has a system in place, sure, but Kyler Murray makes it go, and Kyler Murray can make any system go pretty much. Vance Joseph making that defense as good as it is what's made. That's the gap between what the preseason expectations were for the Cardinals and where they've come out to.
Yeah, it's been a really fascinating run through the early season for the Cardinals. They're really looking well positioned. You know, the Rams game, and then of course, you know, going into Cleveland last week and really taking care of business. Impressive stuff from them. Now, I guess last point here, 17 points is a lot of points, Mario, but it was a lot of points for the Bills to cover against the Texans. They didn't really seem to break a sweat doing it. So I think I lay the wood even with that many points.
Sure. I can't be against, I don't know how to think of three scores, but Cards could do it. Texans could give it up.
Yeah, I mean, Texans could just score 10 points, and then, you know, I don't think the Cardinals are scoring less than
30. They could score zero.
They very well could score zero. They've done it before, and they'll probably do it again. Before we get on to our next game, we got our message from our friends over at Thrive. Thrive is back for another season of fantasy football, and they're running huge guaranteed contests each week of the NFL season. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus only on the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free 6-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you claim your free RotoWire subscription. First, visit rotowire.com/thrive. Second, deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. And then number three, play in your first paid contest and receive a free 6 months RotoWire subscription. It's just that easy. Those three steps. Go on over rotowire.com/thrive. All right, Mario, as we get to the end here, we got Bucks, Bears. Bucks, 12-point favorites in this one against the Bears. This is another kind of tricky one. The Bears have been Jekyll and Hyde a little bit, and I think that the Bucks can take the paint off of pretty much anyone that's not a very, very good to elite team. So I could definitely see the Bucs winning this one by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, pretty difficult spot for Justin Fields, even with the Tampa Bay secondary a bit beat up. It's just against a pass rush like they have and going on the road, it's not exactly the same as the Cleveland scenario from a few weeks ago, but a similar sort of risk, and probably with even more pressure from the opposing offense, obviously, with Brady and the Buccaneers offense scoring the way it is this year. The Bears defense, I think, has some good pieces. And when you have Jalen Johnson at corner, and if Eddie Jackson can be a good safety, Roquan Smith kind of player, he can be Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack. There is a way they can play good defense against some teams. And it wouldn't be shocking to me if they put together like a surprisingly decent effort against the Buccaneers, if they kind of come up with some clever novel designs, because the Buccaneers certainly will. They tend to find play designs that they don't necessarily put on tape often to come through at like critical moments in games. And it's tough to beat them on third down pressure situations because of that. But if the Bears are kind of on one of their smarter days, they could slow, I think, Tampa enough to maybe cover. But basically you have to give the non Jalen Johnson corners a lot of help, and you need the pass rush to close in, and you need Roquan to maybe keep those tight ends under control. But if that all happens, I mean, Roquan and Jalen Johnson are star players, at least, and Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack are the same usually.
Yeah, it's definitely a very impressive defense on paper, and they can occasionally put it together for sure. So that is definitely true. And Antonio Brown a little bit dinged up, maybe the Buccaneers, and they haven't been great against the spread this year, but that's been more so on the road. At home, they've been, I think they're like 2-1 against the spread, so. We'll see how it shakes out, but I think at this stage, even with what you're saying there, I probably still lean the Bucks, just because my faith in the Bears offense is nil.
Yeah.
Indy going out to San Francisco to play the 49ers. 49ers, 4-point favorites at home. You know, the Niners coming off the bye. So Trey Lance obviously got his feet wet a couple weeks ago. So that should certainly help things a little bit. Indianapolis showing a little bit of signs of life over the last little bit as well in their own right. How do you see this one shaking out? I feel like it's a little bit too much credit to be giving the 49ers. I don't know if the 49ers are very good.
Right. So Garoppolo's out. Is that the deal?
I think he's getting better, but he very well could be. I will have it.
Okay. Cause yeah, if he's not physically able to play, then Lance starts. But once Garoppolo can play, I think Lance is going to the bench, right or wrong. I think that's what'll happen. In any case, I don't know what I even think is better for San Francisco. I guess Lance is obviously the better runner, but he is rough as a passer. He does look like a quarterback who was not prepared to start and was thrown in unexpectedly due to injury in the middle of the season for a road start against the maybe league's best team. That all looked like what it was. Going back home, getting the time to prepare for the Colts would be a different scenario, especially with the Colts looking as busted as they've been at certain points this year. And even against the Texans, it's like that was a pretty close game until they started giving Jonathan Taylor the ball in the second half. Who could have seen that coming? But I don't know. Frank Reich is an arrogant coach who puts bad players on the field instead of good ones. Shanahan can do that too, but for more neurotic reasons. Like he's got his evil genius explanation, whereas Frank Reich is more just kind of, he just kind of thinks it's a good idea to put your bad players on the field sometimes to mix things up, and it's not. I think the Shanahan also is going to probably be a step ahead of Reich in terms of like game planning stuff. Kooky as he might be, he's still good at X's and O's. So I do like the 49ers to win this. 4 points, like you said, is a lot. It seems to assume like a quarterback advantage and like a sizable defense advantage, and maybe one of those is true, but probably not both. I don't know.
Probably not both. So yeah, we'll see how that one shakes out there on Sunday night, and we'll hold off on the Monday nighter between the Saints and the Seahawks. Geno Smith in prime time once again, baby. What a year we're having. That's going to do it for this edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.